Coming up next on Ham Nation, a fascinating program. We're all over the place. We're going to measure coax impedance with an MFJ antenna analyzer. We're going to talk with Larry, the ham radio guy. Dale is here with some great tips on winterizing. We've got Dr. T, and I make friends all over the great state of Texas. That's next on Ham Nation.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit.
This episode of Ham Nation is brought to you by ICOM. For more information, visit icomamerica.com/hamnation. By Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Introducing Rate Shield Approval. If you're in the market to buy a home, Rate Shield Approval locks up your rate for up to 90 days while you shop. It's a real game changer. Learn more and get started at rocketmortgage.com/hamnation. And by DX Engineering. DX Engineering offers practically everything you need to outfit your shack, plus the fastest shipping in the industry. Most in-stock items ship the same day, Monday through Friday, until 10 p.m. Eastern. For more information, visit dxengineering.com/hamnation.
This is Ham Nation, episode number 378, November 28th, 2018, measuring coax impedance.
Good evening and welcome to another episode of Ham Nation. I'm George, W5JDX. Bob Heil is not with us tonight, and neither is Gordo, but we've got some of the regular crew here. Down to my south, we've got Don. From Picayune, Mississippi. Don, how are things down there tonight?
You referred to me as regular. I'll have you know I'm irregular. I've got my Saints shirt on because we're getting ready to whip the snot out of the Cowboys. And I've got my OU hat on because we're getting ready to whip the snot out of the Longhorns. And a little something for you Texas folks. There you go. NCAA is real hot about that. We'll see. They can't find me. I'm not in Oklahoma. But anyway, some great Christmas music going on right now. Actually, we're going on right now on WTWW, but after us. Some great Christmas music on WTWW, 5085 and 15810. And as soon as I figure out how to do it, I'm going to be disc jockeying on that thing after the show on Wednesday night. So not doing it this week, but we'll get all up to speed on that. So that's what cool. I'm learning how to do. George, it's going to be fun. Oh, Dr. T is going to be with us on video tonight after Newsline. So we've got a solar update with that fine lady tonight.
Cool. Yeah, I've also heard there might be a sneak peek from Santa sometime tonight during the show, or at least some information on him.
I think so.
And I think we just saw a glimpse of Dale there. He's back with us tonight. Hi, Dale. What are you up to?
Oh, not too much, but I had a great Thanksgiving. It got up into the 60s. Saturday was great. We were in the upper 70s. That followed that cold weather we sent down to you there earlier. And tonight we got a lot of good videos. Dan's got a couple of more, and we got a short clip and an interesting sea story, or at least a travel story from a ham that spent some time in Spain and Portugal this summer. So should be a good video segment this evening. George, go ahead.
Cool. Well, we're looking forward to that and seeing what you've got going on there and what Dan and everyone else has been up to. And, of course, we've got the chat room lady with us again. Amanda, how are things out in Colorado?
They're doing super fantastic here in Colorado. We're getting snow in the mountains and it's staying warm down here in the plains. So I'm really loving it. Give me all your questions tonight. We're going to have a little bit of extra time, I think. And our host would love to answer those questions for you. Not to mention, I was going to show a video of my Christmas tower tree, but I didn't get a chance to edit it. So I'll send a photo instead. Anyhow, I'll be here all night.
Cool. Well, we'll see you a little later in the show. Maybe we'll have a few good questions there that'll stump us. Gordo, as we mentioned earlier, is not with us tonight, but he did send a photo from the beach. And this is their field day. Well, it wasn't field day. This was Thanksgiving on the beach, and Gordo's down there testing out the loop and the dipole, making some comparison tests. He can't be with us tonight because he's in his communications van headed to Arizona to the Mesa Superstition Ham Fest. That's going to be on Saturday. But Gordo got some interesting results out of that comparison, and I know he's going to be showing them to us when he gets back here next week. On the 5th, he'll be at the QRZ.com 25th anniversary out with Fred and everyone, and he'll be giving us a report from there. So looking forward to seeing him back next week, and hopefully we'll see Bob back and get a report from him on the and his road trip as well. Well, right now, I'm going to show you something new that I got in the mail this week. This came from the ARRL. I'm trying to look over here so I can show you a picture of it. This is the new 2019 ARRL Amateur Radio Catalog. Just hot off the presses here. Nice, shiny, glossy calendar. It's got a lot of photos, one, of course, new for each month. And there's a lot of details in here, too, like, well, they've got the moon phases in there, the holidays, meteor showers, when to expect them, and some good information for hams throughout the year there. And it'll be nice to look at those pictures up there on the wall as you go through the year and think about this great hobby. And if you order right now, not only do you get the full 2019 calendar, Don, they are going to throw in an extra month. So it's like getting 13 months for the price of 12. You even get January 2020 in there. But a lot of great photos in here. I've enjoyed looking through it. I'm going to hang it on the wall over there after the show tonight. And be looking forward to some great ham fun in 2019, next year. And now, let's go to Don. I think, well, have you got something for us tonight?
I have amateur radio news line and Dr. T, if you're ready for some news and some solar stuff.
Yeah.
From Amateur Radio Newsline Report, number 2143, these are the Ham Nation headlines for Wednesday, November 28th, 2018. We have an update on what is easily one of the most anticipated de-expeditions in the ham radio community, the Bouvet Island de-expedition. Newsline anchor Jim Dameron, NHTMW, has more.
While there are no specific dates for when the 3Y0I team becomes an on-air reality, the operators are now assembling in Cape Town, South Africa, and making preparations for what is expected to be at least a two-week stay. It's expected to take 12 days for them to arrive at their destination in the South Atlantic before getting on the air. They'll be operating on frequencies from 160 to 6 meters and using SSB, CW, and FT8. Their preferred QSL is via Club Logs OQRS, but they'll accept LOTW or via 3Z9DX. The team estimates the total cost for the trip at about $225,000. As the team continues to work out security measures and logistics, this venture takes on even more importance for all interested hams. It follows the scrapping of the 3Y0Z de-expedition in February of this year after one of its ship's engines developed problems, forcing the team to reverse course, even as the coveted island destination was well within their sights.
Okay, movie fans, did you miss having a QSO with Tarzan this month? We mean Tarzan, the film classic, of course.
Moviegoers and fans knew the iconic figure as Tarzan of the Apes, but thanks to Brian Tordoff, KD0GRS, he became Tarzan of the Hams, if only for a day. Using the call sign W0T for Whiskey Zero Tarzan, Brian operated from 8 a.m. to 8 p.m. local time on Saturday, November 10, receiving 83 contacts, three from Canada, one from Norway among them. Each of those contacts helped him celebrate the 100th anniversary of the first Tarzan movie. That film, called Tarzan of the Apes, starred Elmo Lincoln as the first actor to wear the iconic loincloth. There was a lot of material for a rag chew, he said, and his fans checked in, they recalled the the 24 Tarzan novels by Edgar Rice Burroughs, the 48 movies, and the 19 actors who got to portray Tarzan on the screen. Realizing last year that the anniversary would be coming up this year, he applied for a special call sign, and his son helped him produce the special QSL card he designed. For Amateur Radio Newsline, I'm Mike Askins, KE5-CXP.
Here in the U.S., this has been the season for Thanksgiving. One young ham in Arizona, however, gives thanks every day. For Amateur Radio.
We've all heard stories about ham radio playing a part in saving lives. For Travis Gardner, KE7EUL, it was much more than just a story.
I have a seizure disorder. For those that have seizures, ham radio is a very, very good tool to have. So I was sitting at the computer desk one night on the 2100 net, and I don't remember what happened, but I went down onto the carpet, grabbed the mic after the seizure, and said, I need help, thanks to the 2100 net. I'm still alive today.
The 2100 net is an Arizona-based net that runs on a combination of 2-meter, 70-centimeter, and 900 megahertz repeaters throughout the state. Gardner said that he's thankful that he's still alive, and he now tries to do what he can to help others in similar situations and to bring a smile to someone's face. And he owes that chance to ham radio and the quick thinking of the members of the 2100 net. For Amateur Radio Newsline, I'm Paul Brown, WD9-GCO.
And that's all from the Amateur Radio Newsline, your independent source for amateur radio news for four decades and counting at arnewsline.org. With Jim Dameron, N8TMW, Mike Askins, KE5CXP, Paul Brown, WD9GCO, Karen Eve Murray, KD2GUT at the news desk in New York, and our news team across the globe. I'm Don Wilbanks, AE5DW. 7-3. We'll see you next time here on Ham Nation. Now, here's the solar update with Dr. Tamitha Scove, WX6SWW.
We have a massive coronal hole that is rotating into the Earth's strike zone, and this could be a repeat offender for the fourth time for a solar storm. That story and more in the news this week. Space weather this week is getting very exciting. We've been seeing a lot of filament and prominence activity on the sun's limb, but it's not really been solar storm worthy because nothing is really escaping. The big story, however, this week is this massive coronal hole that's going to be rotating into the Earth's strike zone here in the next couple days, and it's going to be sending us some fast solar wind. Now, if this region looks familiar, it should. We've been dancing with this particular solar storm player since August. It has already brought us three solar storms, two of which were G2 level solar storms. Now, this time around, it looks like the hole is beginning to close, so it's probably not going to get us quite as high level storm as we've seen in the past, but it could be a fourth time repeat offender for solar storms, and it could bring Aurora clear down to mid latitudes. Switching to your M-flare threat meter, you can see we continue to be incredibly low when it comes to X-ray flux and therefore by proxy the solar flux. Some of us would actually call this pretty flatlined. This is what we have at solar minimum, folks. We're just not getting all that much. Every now and again, we will get an active region that pops up through the sun's surface and then kind of fizzles out quickly and dives back under. And it's really not giving us much variability in the solar flux. We definitely have no solar flares to deal with. But this does make solar flux low for radio propagation, so we're dealing with poor radio propagation on the Earth's day side. So amateur radio operators and shortwave responders, you guys are just going to have to keep dealing with it. And unfortunately, these conditions will continue over the next week and possibly 2 weeks before we see a reprieve. Switching to our solar storm conditions, you can see we've actually been very quiet when it comes to solar storms. We've been sitting at essentially normal conditions and bumping up to unsettled conditions a little bit here when we'd hit some fast wind, or a little bit there when there would be like a little mini solar storm disturbance or something like that. But nothing that's really been sustained. But all of this is going to change. It's here right at the beginning of the month. We should be hitting that fast solar wind, and that can easily bump us up to active conditions and possibly even storm conditions over a short while. It'll bring sustained aurora to high latitudes, and it could bring some aurora even down to mid latitudes for a short little bit. So what else does the sun have in store for us this week? Well, this is Stereo A. It's our backside monitor. You can see here's Earth, here's the sun, and here's Stereo A staring at the sun from behind. And what you can see on the Wesleyan and Stereo's view, that's the finger of the coronal hole that's now rotated into Earth view, and it's going to be rotating into the Earth strike zone here in the next couple days. But what is interesting is that you see that other kind of weird-looking coronal hole. That's that H-shaped or horseshoe-shaped coronal hole that we had from last rotation. It looks like it's actually surviving its backside passage on the sun, and it will be rotating into Earth view here in the next week, and we will see what kind of disturbance it could bring us. It might even give us a chance to get back up into active conditions, so you aurora photographers, all hope is not lost yet. Now, unfortunately, what you don't see are any active regions on the sun's backside. You do see a little bit here at the very end. You see a little bit of regions rotating into Stereo's view on the east limb. But it's hard to say whether or not these regions are going to continue to survive. If they do make it into Earth's view, it's going to be about 10 days. And until then, well, the radio propagation for amateur radio operators and shortwave responders, the propagation is going to continue to be poor easily over the next week to 10 days. Switching to your solar storm conditions and aurora possibilities over the coming week, we are anticipating the hit from that fast wind from that massive coronal hole that's rotating into the Earth strike zone. At high latitudes, NOAA is expecting major storm conditions right at the beginning of the month. As a matter of fact, they're expecting about 70% chance of a major storm, with even minor storm conditions lasting in through the weekend and possibly into the beginning of next week. So we should have some decent aurora possibilities for you guys at high latitudes. Now, mid latitudes, we're only expecting active conditions with about a 25% chance of a minor storm, and we could easily see sporadic active conditions through the weekend and then tapering off as the beginning of the week starts. So there is a good chance for you aurora photographers at mid latitudes to get a decent show. Switching to your solar flare and particle radiation storm outlook over the coming week, we are in solar minimum and we do have a spotless sun yet again. So that means everything is in the green when it comes to solar flares. This should make GPS users on Earth's dayside very happy. Now, unfortunately, this also means the solar flux is extremely low. So amateur radio and shortwave radio responders, you guys are dealing with poor radio propagation right now, and this could easily continue over the next week, possibly even the next 10 days before we get a reprieve. Now, also because we're at solar minimum, the cosmic ray flux is higher than it would be normally. So all of you frequent flyers, and this includes air crew who fly over 800 hours annually and fly at high latitudes and high altitudes, you are now in the marginal range for radiation dose. And this does include you prenatal passengers. So please take this into consideration in your flight plans. So the space weather this week is getting very exciting. We have that massive coronal hole that's going to be rotating into the Earth strike zone here in the next couple days. And since this has been a solar storm producer in the past, we're going to expect something close to a solar storm at least. The hole is finally beginning to close up on us, which means it's probably not going to hit us quite as hard as it has hit us in the past. So effects may ramp up just a little bit more than they had before. So your aurora photographers, this time you're going to have to stay on your toes, especially if photographers at mid-latitudes, to make sure you get the shots you want. Now, as far as amateur radio operators are concerned, well, yes, we're back to a spotless sun, and unfortunately, the solar flux is back into the 60s. And so this means poor radio propagation, and you're just going to have to kind of deal with that on Earth's day side. Now, on Earth's night side, well, you're also going to be dealing with some issues with radio propagation because of the solar storm, but those conditions should pass once you get through this weekend. Now, as far as your GPS operators are concerned, well, as long as you stay away from the dawn dust terminators and away from aurora, your GPS reception should look pretty good. I'm Tamitha Scove. Thank you for watching.
Always good stuff from the good doctor. And if you're not following her on Twitter, you really should, at Tamitha Scove. I say it every week because it's true. Seriously, you're missing a lot if you don't follow her on Twitter, because she constantly has new stuff going up all the time. I don't think she sleeps. I seriously don't. And there is the spaceweatherwoman.com website with her her happy smiling face on there. We've got some good stuff coming up for tonight. Dale's going to be here with Show Me Your Shack. George has some really good stuff on Smoke and Solder next. But first, here's a word from our friends at ICOM.
For the love of the holidays, surprise your favorite ham this season with the gift that's on their hot list. The holidays are just around the corner, and ICOM has plenty of cheer for everyone. IC7610, the SDR every ham wants, and just in time for the holidays. This high-performance SDR has the ability to pick out the faintest signals, even in the presence of stronger adjacent signals. The ICOM IC7610 is a direct sampling software-defined radio that will change the world's definition of a SDR. RF direct sampling system, 110 RMDR, independent dual receivers, and dual digicell. IC7300, changing the way entry-level HF is designed. This high-performance, innovative HF transceiver with a compact design will far exceed your expectations. RF direct sampling, 15 discrete bandpass filters, large 4.3-inch color touchscreen, real-time spectrum scope, and SD memory card slot. ICR30, raise the bar on DC to daylight receivers. Powerful yet easy to use, the ICR30 is packed full of features you've come to expect from ICOM. Built-in GPS and Bluetooth, dual bandwidth recording, high-speed scan, and there's an Android and iOS app available. The perfect stocking stuffer, the ID51A+2 provides new modes for extended D-Star coverage. Enjoy integrated GPS, independent AM/FM receiver, and free Android apps. Terminal and access point mode, send and receive text messages and pictures. DV fast data mode, and easy FM repeater setting. Visit ICOMAmerica.com/amateur for more information on all the great ICOM radios.
And you can tune in and enter to win. After each episode of Ham Nation, go to ICOMAmerica.com/hamnation and register for some great swag prizes. They've got T-shirts and hats. While you're there, you'll be registered for the monthly grand prize drawing for a new radio. And for November, that radio is the ID4100A entry-level D-Star mobile with big rig features. It's a dual-band D-Star and analog transceiver. It's got an upgraded user-friendly interface that makes operating D-Star much easier than the model it's replacing. It has a built-in GPS, micro SD card slot for voice and data storage, and there's an optional Bluetooth board available. And if you get that, you can download free apps for iOS and Android and make operating the rig a breeze. So go to ICOMAmerica.com/hamnation after this and each episode of Ham Nation and register to win. Sign up, good luck, and don't forget to follow ICOM America Inc. on Facebook and Twitter. And Smoke and Solder tonight, we've got a couple of videos here. The first one, though, comes from our friend WD0AKX. You know, you've heard of Larry the Cable Guy. This is Larry the Radio Ham Guy.
Hi, Larry WD0AKX. Found this neat little device on Amazon from the Drock Store, D-R-O-K. They have a website also. I'm not affiliated with the company in any way or anything like that. I thought it'd be a handy device to have on the workbench here for less than $15. It's an adjustable voltage DC to DC converter regulator. It'll take a voltage input on this side and convert it to a lower voltage on the output. Say if I want to use my 13.8 volt power supply on the bench here and input that, and I need 5 volts or 9 volts for a little project I'm working on, well, this will fit the bill for a good price. It's pretty easy to assemble. The board is pre-assembled, and the only thing you have to assemble is the housing itself. It's pretty easy to do, about 10 minutes, 15 minutes, you'll have it all together. So I just thought it was kind of neat. It'll come in handy here. I'll show you what I mean here. Let's take a look. So this is the Drock LM2596 DC voltage regulator and constant current source. It's D-R-O-K is how you spell it. Drock, I believe. This is the housing. Some assembly required. The input voltage can be anywhere between 5 and 36 volts, and the output can be adjusted between 1 and a quarter volts to 32 volts.
It's recommended to keep the current draw under 3 amps without additional heat sink. And there's the business card. And they have a lot of other cool modules if you look at their site. I need to pull this backing off of the plastic, protective backing, to keep the housing nice. And this actually takes longer than the rest of the project. The assembly is quite easy. If you look it over a little bit, there's only one way things can really go, and it's just like putting together an easy puzzle. There are standoffs that mount on the bottom. The board goes on top of those standoffs, and I'm just going to see how the housing will fit together here. Just like a puzzle, it'll only go together one way, lining up the holes with the controls on the board. And I'm just going to kind of make sure everything fits together okay here as I move along. Make sure the holes will line up, which it looks like they do very nicely. It comes with a small heat sink here with an adhesive backing you peel off and stick down to the top of the regulator. They recommend less than 3 amps using this heat sink. If you need to draw more than that, you'll want to figure out something more to do with the heat sink. And there's these standoffs on top of the board here. You want to snug them up. I found mine for under $15 on Amazon. That's where I got it. Fit the pieces together here now and make sure the holes line up with the controls like that. If you don't need a variable voltage regulator, they do have other modules for about half the price, set at preset voltages like 5 volts or 9 volts. You'll just look things over. It looks like it's all together good. I have it hooked up on the input side here to my 13.8 volt power supply on the workbench. Then there is the voltage set control and the current limiting control. There are LED indicators to the right to indicate if you are in charge mode or constant current or constant voltage mode. And this is the output side. There is also a USB port here. You just want to make sure you set your voltage output at 5 volts if you're going to use that. Right now you can see my voltage output is set at 9 volts. These switches on the front here are for turning the display on and off and changing the display status to show you voltage or current. There's an LED to the right and left of the display to show you if it's monitoring the input or output voltage. And I like this. It does have short circuit protection. If you end up short circuiting the output, it will shut down. And this is another quick overview of the controls. This is available on their website. I do have an external digital voltmeter hooked up here right now. And you can see there's a slight difference between the readings. So basically what this module will do for you is convert a higher level DC voltage on the input to a lower voltage on the output, whatever you happen to need. So this is how you set the voltage. I'm going to set it to 5 volts output using my 13.8 volt power supply on the input. There we go. Here I'm using it to supply 9 volts to my component tester. So this regulator will come in handy on the workbench. I hope you enjoyed 7-3, and thanks for watching. I'm a radio ham guy.
And boy, that is a great little device there, Larry. Thanks for showing that to us. And I think, well, I didn't know before the show tonight, but I think Burke has one of these out at Twit. And there it is right there, just minus the case. And I went and looked at that website, DROKING, afterwards, and boy, they got some nice stuff there. I saw a regulator that would go, well, I don't remember the voltage range now, but it looked very similar to that one, but was good for 6 amps. So I'm thinking about going back and checking that out. It's only like $12. So some really great little kits and things out there these days. Inexpensive technology has come a long way. Well, this next video here is one that I don't know. I shot a number of years ago, and I just had a case this week where I was thinking about measuring the impedance of an unknown coax. And, well, I decided to pull this video back up, and we'd take a look at how you'd go about doing that.
Let's say you got a piece of coax with no markings on it, and you want to know what impedance it is. Well, let's pretend there's no markings on it. How would you go about doing that? Well, if you've got one of these MFJ 259 antenna analyzers, this thing's kind of stood the test of time. This is the latest model, MFJ 259C, where they've added lower frequency ranges on it, and it also covers the 220 band. How would you do this? Well, it's pretty simple. First, let's measure a known cable so we know how this thing works. Here's a piece of RG58/U. We'll need a load to put on here so that we can test. Let's just take a look at a couple of loads, though. This is a terminator from the old thin Ethernet connections where we had to put a 50-ohm terminator on the end of it. This one, 52 ohms, zero reactance. As we switch around through the different frequency bands, it's pretty much holding around 52 ohms there. Now let's take a look at another load. This one is an old Radio Shack CB load that they used to sell. It's nothing but a 2-watt resistor soldered up inside. 37 ohms and 11 ohms of reactance. If we come on down in frequency where it was meant to operate, well, it's 50 ohms with 5 ohms of reactance. You'd rather see that reactance on zero. Not terribly bad, but not perfect either. Now, to do our test here on the transmission line, we're supposed to use a load that's, you know, somewhere in the range that you suspect the cable's impedance will be, but I'm going to use a 100-ohm resistor here, and I've just got it hooked to the end of a BNCT here. Let's just look at it and see what it measures. 108, 111 ohms with some reactance here. That's because this thing is just kind of hanging out in the open. I measured it with an ohm meter, and it was 111 ohms. As we change frequencies, though, we can see it's starting to change impedance a pretty good bit. Nevertheless, that's what we're going to use for our test. What we do is connect our load to one end of the coax, connect the other end of the coax here to the 259B, and you know, this is one reason I like this analyzer. There's a lot of new fancy analyzers with graphic displays on them and such, but this one just does more measurements than you can do with most others. We start on the lowest frequency that we've got. And what we're going to look for here is nulling the resistance and reactance at the same time. That doesn't mean that it's going to go to zero. We're looking for a null. That's a dip. So we'll start now at our lowest frequency on the analyzer, 530 kilohertz. And we'll start sweeping through, trying to find a null. No null there. Let's sweep back down through this band. None there. Starts dropping there, but I wouldn't really call that a null. Little drop here, but I think we can do better than that. Let's go up to the next range here, 11 to 28 megahertz. Let's see if we can find a null. Now we notice the reactance dropped to zero right there. But the resistance was going up at that point. It wasn't nulling. Now we're getting somewhere. Okay, 0 ohms of reactance. That's as low as it can get. 27 here on resistance. Let's see if that was a null point on it. Okay, as the reactance starts going up, so does the resistance. Let's go the other direction. Same thing. So there's our null right there. Now, we need to press the gate and make sure that the phase angle equals zero. And it does. Now we need to tune up in frequency and look for a peak in impedance with the X still being nulled. And that looks like the peak there, the R100, X equals zero. Again, we press the gate and phase angle still equals zero here. So our first reading was 27. This time we've got 100. Now we can calculate the impedance of the line. 27 times 100. 2700, and we take the square root of that number, and it says 51.96 ohms. That's not bad. This is a 50-ohm cable, but if you look on Wikipedia, it says that RG58/U is either 50 or 52 ohms. So it looks like this test worked. Now let's try it on our unknown cable. And we'll do the same thing here. Start at the lowest frequency and look for the null on both resistance and reactance. Not there. 0 ohms of reactance here. Let's watch the resistance as we tune either side of that. One. If we go past it, it starts increasing. So let's just see. Perhaps that is a null. So we'll say resistance here is 48. And now let's look for a peak. But first we need to press that gate. Yeah, phase angle still 0 degrees here. There it is right there. And reactance is zero. Look at our gate. Phase angle is still zero. So that's 108, we'll call it. 48 times 108. Take the square root of that. It says this is a 72-ohm cable. This is RG6. So it's supposed to be 75 ohms. That's pretty close. So we can say for pretty much certain this is a 75-ohm cable. We wouldn't mistake it for a 50-ohm. So there you go, how you can measure the impedance of a coax using an antenna analyzer.
Now, I don't know if you could do that with just any analyzer. I did it with the MFJ-259 there. That analyzer came with the instructions that told me how to do it. When I get a chance, I'm going to go back and try duplicating that with one of the digital analyzers and see how that works out, if it can be done there. That would be interesting. But I don't know. None of them come with instructions for a lot of the things that you can do with the 259. We'll just have to see, though. Well, you know, last week I asked a question. We were talking about satellites because Randy had been at AMSAT. And I wanted to know what height above Earth would a geostationary satellite be located? Now, we got an answer. It came from Dwayne DeSalvo, KD6AF. And Dwayne said that 35,786 kilometers, which is 22,236 miles above the Earth. And that's where all our geostationary satellites are located. And it's starting to get kind of crowded up there, so they've putting them closer together, which means you need a little better dish to pick out individual birds than you used to need. So congratulations, Dwayne. Gary Drash, K9DJT, is going to be sending you one of his great books. Ham Radio is Alive and Well. I know you're going to enjoy it. It's a fun read. And thanks, Gary, for making those available. For next week, I've got another question. You know, I'm going to be doing an episode of Ham College this Friday night at 8 over at live.amateurlogic.tv. And we're studying the general question pool in there now. And I just happen to have one of Gordo's general books right here that has one of the questions I'm going to be asking Friday. Which of the following describes how a speech processor affects a transmitted single sideband phone signal? Does it increase peak power? Does it increase average power? Does it reduce harmonic distortion? Or does it reduce intermodulation distortion? Which of those describes how a speech processor affects a transmitted single sideband phone signal? If you think you know the answer, send it to me, hamnationcontest@gmail.com, and you could win one of Gordo's books here, either the General Class Amateur Radio Study Guide or the Extra. Gordo's going to make one available. Just answer that simple question for me. Send it to hamnationcontest@gmail.com, and who knows? might be reading your name next week. One other thing I want to mention here is Randy is collecting photos, not videos, but photos from our viewers here of what projects or what soldering, wrenching, drilling, what are you building? Randy wants photos of it because he's working on a segment here to show some of the projects that our viewers are working on. If you've got something you've been working on there and putting together, well, snap a photo and send it to Randy, K7AGE at Outlook.com, and he'll use it in an upcoming projects video here that he's working on. Well, you know, no one is tuned into the financial market like Don Wilbanks. I think
the lack had come of up the with financial something. Market. Oh, my God. Oh, my. You know, that's funny. You know, those MFJ antenna analyzers, them things is fabulous. But I'll tell you one thing they can't do. They can't help you with your mortgage. That's one thing they can't do. And that's why we have Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. And let me tell you about that. Let's just talk about buying a home for a second because, well, you know, of rising interest rates, there's a whole lot of unpredictability when it comes to buying a home these days. It can, quite frankly, cause a whole lot of anxiety. Well, the friends at Quicken Loans are doing something about that, and they call it the power buying process. And it's really pretty simple. Step one, you answer a few simple questions. They'll check your credit for pre-qualified approval. Step two, Quicken Loans will verify your income, assets, and credit in less than 24 hours, give you a verified approval that gives you the strength of a cash buyer. And step three, once you're verified, you qualify for the all-new exclusive Rate Shield approval. And what that does is it locks up your rate for up to 90 days while you shop. The best part is if the rates go up, your rates stay the same. But if the rates go down, your rate also drops. So either way, you're a winner. It's kind of thinking you would expect from America's largest mortgage lender. To get started, go to rocketmortgage.com/hamnation. Rate Shield approval is only valid on certain 30-year purchase transactions. Additional conditions or exclusions may apply. Based on Quicken Loans data in comparison to public data records, equal housing lender licensed in all 50 states, NMLSconsumerAccess.org number 3030. That's rocketmortgage.com/hamnation. And we do appreciate Rocket Mortgage and their support of what we do here on Ham Nation. We also appreciate Dale, because Dale shows us all kinds of stuff. You know, Dale, it's not been quite as cold down here as it has been where you are. We were like 32 this morning, 31 yesterday. So we're not really worried about winterizing much, but I know some folks up in the north are, right?
That's right. We've got a good winterizing video, and Dan's got a couple of, I wouldn't call it nice, winter photos. In fact, they look like the weather's downright nasty. So that's one of three videos. We got a great story from an overseas traveler also. And let's kick it off right away. Jump in with a how-to video, how to winterize your camper and all the ham radio gear in it. With that, here's Dan.
This is winterizing a camper with amateur radio equipment, electrical. Well, if you're like me, you live up in cold country. And believe me, in Wisconsin, it can get cold. So we have to winterize. In the winter, ice crystals can grow on just about everything. That's not very good for electrical. In my case, I have a camper that I have to winterize. First thing we have to do is pack up all the amateur radio equipment that we have in the camper. That all goes into totes. That's the easy part. Anything that's going to get subjected to the minus 24 degrees Fahrenheit that we have up here in Wisconsin, we definitely want to cover up. So in my case, I start with the coaxial cables. There's four coaxial cables in this hole, two for HF and two for VHF and UHF. So what I do is pretty simple. I just take the coaxial cables, wrap them in a shop rag, then I put that in a plastic bag. Put a rubber band around the plastic bag. And stuff it the best you can back in the hole. You stuff it back in the hole so the squirrels don't get in the winter. The battery part isn't as easy. In my case, I have it in a battery box. I open up the battery box and disconnect the power from the battery. The 120-volt power line has already been disconnected from the camper. Just like the coaxial cables before, I wrap them in a shop rag. I take the positive terminal first and put that in the center of the rag. The negative is the last one to go in the rag. That all goes into a plastic bag and again gets tied with a rubber band. All to keep those connectors as dry as possible. Once the battery is disconnected, I remove the battery from the camper. As long as we're on this end of the trailer, we might as well remove the LP tank as well. What I put where the LP tank was is a wire core. It keeps the snow from collecting in the tank ring and on the tarp that'll be covering the camper. Then I put the trailer cable, the battery bag, the cables that went to the battery, and the LP tank hose and put them all together and wrap them up for the winter. I then bring the ham radio equipment and the battery from the camper into the house. Again, the radio equipment's kept in a tote. As for the battery, I have a little carpeted area where I can set the battery box, then to connect the tender. The tender will keep the charge over the winter, making sure that negative is connected to negative and positive is connected to positive. You also want to make sure that you're in a well-ventilated area and plug that into the AC line. Put the cover back on the battery, and we'll see it in spring. And that's winterizing a camper with amateur radio equipment, electrical. I hope this video has been helpful. And 7-3 from N9LVS.
Well, thanks, Diane. It's definitely that time of year, right before Thanksgiving there, the weekend before we got down to the low 20s overnight. The high temperature in the day was barely in the high 20s. So it even does it to us down here in the south part of Kansas. Dan's second video features the Fox Cities Amateur Radio Club and their annual Swap Fest. It's a great event video, and it's a clinic for those of you who would like to see how to do your event videos for Ham Nation. Let's watch.
The Fox Cities Amateur Radio Club held their 2018 Swap Fest on November 4th at Monarch Gardens in Appleton. Setup for the Ham Fest started early, as the doors opened at 8 a.m. Once the doors opened, Bernie, N9YMC, and Lori, KC9SCO, were there to greet everybody. At the start, the line went right out the door. Donna, KC9THF, was manning the raffle table. The Fox Cities Amateur Radio Club just recently received an old news van, so there's plenty of places for the donated money to go. There was a pretty large attendance at the Fox Cities Amateur Radio Club Swap Fest. The American Radio Relay League had a booth there. Wolf River Coils also had a booth at the fest, showing off their line of HF antennas. The RF adapter guy was also there, with all kinds of different PL259s and different RF connectors, as well as some pretty cool antennas. The YLRL had a nice little display, as well as the Northeast Wisconsin DX Association also had a nice little display. Another organization that was there was the QCWA, or Quarter Century Wireless Association. For those looking to get their ham license or to upgrade, we had a VE team eager to help you with that process, and quite a few people took their exam. Once back upstairs, there was quite a bit of test equipment to look at. Everything from oscilloscopes to power supplies. And if you're in the need for vintage equipment, boy, there was a lot there. Stuff from the 50s, 60s, and 70s. I even saw this old oscilloscope. And some of the old gear was really in great shape. And this was pretty cool. Some old World War II equipment. In the upper corner was an old Morse code key box with about 20 code keys in it. And if you're going to get some old gear, you're definitely going to need some tubes. And this old radio I saw that had been newly restored. Even the inside was pristine. And that's it from the Foxy's Amateur Radio Club Swap Fest 2018. From Appleton, Wisconsin, this is Dan, N9LVS, 7-3.
Well, thanks again, Dan, and we appreciate you covering the annual Fox City Swap Fest every year, and for showing our viewers how they can present their videos of their Swap Fest and Ham Fest and other special events here on Ham Nation. Now we've got a nice story with a few images thrown in from Doug Wilkerson AA0DW. He calls it his daily moment of sangria. Victor, if we could bring the first slide up. Doug was on vacation in Spain and Portugal this summer and became fond of sangria. So to entertain his Facebook friends, he began posting a glass of sangria against a local backdrop every time he visited a new location. While setting up his shop at a restaurant in Spain, he noticed what he thought was a hex beam way off in the distance. He zoomed out, took a look, and by golly, it was. Well, several hams there in the city recognized the antenna. They came up with a call sign. It was EA7GT. The two soon got together with two other hams and spent a great night in a pizzeria. Google Translate helped Doug communicate, and the four hams had a great night. As Doug has shown, ham radio is truly a unique fraternity. Doug says he'll forever treasure the hospitality and look forward to a continuing friendship with these people on the air. Well, finally, to wrap up things for this November 28th, Danny McKinley, W5FRT, sent us a 15-minute video tour of the Texoma Ham Fest down in Ardmore, Oklahoma, in late October. And while we were watching, we came upon a great light moment to wrap up this segment. Let's watch.
There's a John K5BOI walking around.
Let me show you something here. This is the deal.
Show me.
Let me show you what you got here. Let me show you what we got.
What you got here? K5BOI.
This is a DX100 made by the Heathkit Corporation in Benton Harbor, Michigan. I'm selling it today for $200. Take it
$200, and it's got the power cord with it.
Got the power cord with it. You can't beat it. The guy,
I'm telling you. And it's got all these knobs.
Absolutely.
Can you twist these knobs a little bit?
Yeah.
Twist the knob.
Yeah,
see there. They work.
See?
Oh, yeah.
It's been kept in a chicken coop, so it's been well cared for.
Owned by a little old chicken.
Yeah.
only talked on Sundays.
Okay. That little old chicken only talks on Sunday. That was a great one, Danny. We appreciate it. And we got that clip from your longer YouTube video there that you sent us the link to before. Thanks so much for sharing your video with our Ham Nation viewers. Well, that's it for tonight. And if we receive a few of your videos, we'll be back around December 19th. With another Ham Nation video segment. We are dependent on you, the Ham Nation viewer, to send us your shack photos and your videos. So if you have any questions about how you can produce a video, just send me an email at hamnationvideos, all one word, at twit.tv. We'll be glad to help you out and get your video on the air here on the video segment. Well, let's go now to our Ham Nation studio at the North Pole. And for the viewing fun, here's Santa.
Ho, 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 ho. Hello, boys and girls. My favorite time of the year is here again. Yep, it's the Santa Watch Net. That's right, and Santa will be making his rounds. And once again, for the eighth year in a row, the gang at the Dewdrop Inn will be watching the radar. Join the Santa Watch Net starting at 1800 hours Eastern Time.
Oh, and my little elf Dave, N3N TV. Oh, he's still so cute. Gonna be calling the net and keeping track of St. Nick's location.
And just like last year, Santa has a radio in his sleigh, and he may chat with the kids again.
Oh, yes. Bring all the little ones and get them checked in. Third-party traffic is always on the nice list.
Once again, it's the Santa Watch Net. Christmas Eve, 1800 hours Eastern on the Do Drop In Echo Link conference server. Node number 355-800.
Ho, ho, ho. And Merry Christmas from me, old Santa, and all my little elves at the Do Drop In. Ho, 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 ho.
Oh, that's always a great fun time, the Santa Watch Net. Now, I believe they've had a change to the node number, so you might want to check into that. I believe 355-800 may be down right now. I'll try to figure that out for you and get you some information on that. But first, I want to talk to you about DX Engineering, because the hams at DX Engineering, well, you know, they know Santa Claus personally, and Santa knows that a well-equipped shack deserves high-quality tools and accessories. That's why he shops at DX Engineering, because they carry a full lineup of shack essentials like coax cable tool kits, soldering irons and supplies, time-saving heat shrink, self-solder wire splice connectors. The DX Engineering heat shrink self-solder wire splice connectors give you an easy way to make permanent waterproof electrical wire connections. These connectors let you quickly solder and weather seal insulated wire splices with no more than a heat gun. That means no crimping tool, no solder required. They feature a solder ring with flux inside a transparent heat adhesive lined heat shrink sleeve. I think we've seen those on Ham Nation before. Just insert the wires into each end of the connector. Heat the sleeve with an ordinary heat gun and you're done. They come in four color-coded sizes to cover 10 to 26 wire gauge. DX Engineering conveniently also carries heat guns from ECG, Master Appliance, Titan, Tex, and Wagner, including mini and economy guns to industrial-grade models built for years of frequent use. You could choose from a range of soldering irons as well at DX Engineering. Electric, butane, pencil style, and cordless rechargeable models. ECG has some great ones, and they have three new ones. Soldering stations, 50 and 75 watt models with standard temperature controls and a 75 watt digitally controlled model. The low wattage electrically pulse powered irons give hobbyists professional results for general soldering, repairs, and cable and connector terminations. They come with a built-in sponge pad for easy cleaning. Also, check out the DX Engineering soldering supplies like flux pens, lamps, and magnifiers, vices, desoldering blades, tip cleaners, and more from top brands. Everything you need to do some repairs or kit building. Boy, when it gets cold, you want to stay inside and build kits? You need a good soldering station for that. And DX Engineering offers precision-engineered toolkits that enable you to prep and install connectors on your coaxial cables. Several kits tailored to specific cable and connector types are available, like the complete kit, the DXE UT Kit 4, comes with stripping tools, connector assembly tools, braid trimmers, coaxial cable shears, replacement blades to install PL259 and type N connectors to RG8X, 213, and RG8 cable. Also, the coaxial prep toolkit for crimp connectors, that's the DXE UT Kit CC1, contains everything you need to prepare 400 Max, 8U, 213U, LMR400, 8X, and LMR240 size cables for installation of PL259N and BNC connectors, and each tool is available separately. And all the kits come with a custom foam padded carrying case. Pretty slick. And you know, DX Engineering ships faster than anybody else in the industry. Most orders placed by 10 p.m. Eastern are shipped the same day. Proven products, expert advice. DX Engineering is helping you shrink the globe. Request your catalog or shop online 24/7 at dxengineering.com/hamnation. And if you don't have the DX Engineering catalog, well, quite frankly, you need to get this, because I've probably something wrong with it if you don't have one of these. I got a couple. In fact, I've got several. I've got this is one like here. I probably have a stack of about four or five laying around over here, and cool stuff. Get yourself a DX Engineering catalog because, well, all the cool kids have one. Speaking of the cool kids, hello, Amanda.
I am cool. I know it. Speaking of chickens, by the way, I wish my chickens only made noise on Sundays. I think my neighbors would be more appreciative, and I would definitely would. So chickens, if you can take a note from Dale in his video. Let's see. I got some pretty cool questions tonight. Well, first, I have this really cool announcement. You know how I'm going to be in LA December 11th from the Last Man Standing Studios? Guess who else is going to be there? Anybody? 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 Ray Novak. Ooh! That's right.
Ah! Cool.
We're going to be doing it together. So I'm going to run HF and he's going to run D-Star. It's going to be so cool, you guys. Please make contacts with us. We're going to have a lot of fun. When he sent me that message saying that he's going to be there at the same time, I fell out of my chair. I was so excited. Okay, let's move on. This was a really cool question, by the way, because I think that we all have different projects with Raspberry Pis. So Tom in for HAI, he wanted to know, have any of you guys played around with the Raspberry Pi and ham radio? George, I'm going to go to you last because you and Tommy have done a lot of projects. So, Don, what about you?
Yeah, I have two of them. I've got one. It's sitting right up there. I can't get up and show you, but it's a hotspot. has the DV Mega on it. So I can do D-Star and I can do DMR. I can do Yaesu System Fusion if I wanted to. And I have another little Raspberry Pi that I actually have been known to plug my my DVAP into at work sometimes. You know, sometimes I don't want to plug it into the laptop. I'll just bring the Raspberry Pi and a little power supply or a little battery and do it that way. And I do it in the car as well with that one because it's a lot more convenient than bringing this one down here. So, yeah, I love the Raspberry Pis. They're cool. I want to get a few more. Play with them.
Oh, yeah, they're helpful in so many ways. I'll talk about what we use them for. We actually even use them to run repeaters here. So we've run them to control our Davis weather station over here on the left-hand side. And that uploads to the internet, gives all of our weather information. We've run them for an MMDVM, the DVAP for sure. But it also can control an RTCM and run a whole repeater, if you can believe that. So that's how we use them. George, what about you? What are some of your fun times with them?
Well, I've done a number of things with them. I use one quite a bit as a remote terminal to my main Windows box here out in the shack. In the house, I've got a Raspberry Pi set up that I use to VNC back into the machine sitting here in the shack, and basically gives me a Windows PC with everything I can do with it. And it's just like a dumb terminal for it. It's as fast as, my i7 PC, because that's essentially what it is. It's just, an extension terminal off of it. Now, that's what I do with it most, but I also have, a DV Mega hotspot that I use for D-Star. I used to use it some for DMR, but that has quit working for some reason, so I really need to rebuild that one and get it going again. I've done PSK31 on it before. Not a lot, but some. I built an EchoLink node with it once upon a time, but it was back, I don't remember if it was the original Pi or if it was the Pi 2. And I got it to run, but it just was not reliable. I think with the faster Raspberry Pi 3s now, you'd have a lot more luck with that. So I may revisit that again. But what I've been doing here for the last couple of weeks is, I'm a computer programmer too, and I've wanted to program something on the Pi, but, I haven't learned Python and really don't care that much about learning another language. I already know Visual Basic and C#, and I thought, well, I'm going to try writing a program on this Raspberry Pi using C#. So I installed Mono Develop on it, mono.net, and have been writing with that. And while it's a little different than, the Visual Studio C#, it does work pretty good, and I'm having a blast. It's almost like when I first started learning to program. Well, except, I can easily or much quicker find out things now. But, there's just so much you can do with them. And $35, how can you argue with that?
Totally true. And they did not give any Black Friday deals on Raspberry Pis, by the way, unless somebody else knew about them that I did not, because I searched. And I've got to get Jeff something. If anyone has any suggestions, he constantly takes the Raspberry Pi and connects it to our TV for his viewing page, and it drives me nuts. So, because then he ends up disconnecting all my AV and visuals, and I go to watch Netflix, and I have nothing. So, if anyone has any solutions to that, we don't have any extra monitors, but give me something because it's going to be Jeff's Christmas present. So, what do you got there, Dale?
This is a Zoom spot, and it runs on a Raspberry Pi 0W, the W standing for Wi-Fi. So with that and the Pi Star software, you can come up and configure right from your PC or from your Mac and talk to it, set it up, connect to the Wi-Fi, and then go into PiStar and configure all the settings, tell it which modes you want to operate. We set it up with D-Star and DMR and use both. In fact, we can listen to both at the same time and actually use both with, of course, we need two different radios, one with the D-Star. We use the ID51, and then one with the DMR. We use an Anytone 868. So quite a little gadget. Also, we have another one in the shack here, which is running FlightAware. Now, that's something that's a lot of fun to do for hams, I think. It was for me. I piddled around with the software for FlightAware. It's called ASDB. It's for tracking aircraft in motion. And eventually wound up getting a dongle that was actually optimized for 1090 megahertz or 1.090 gigahertz. And I pick up aircraft out to 250 miles. Sometimes on my screen when I tune into the Raspberry Pi, I have 160 aircraft on the screen here in the Midwest. So it's quite amazing. There's about 30 or 40,000 people that are running these little receivers around the world. And we are ranked about 1,700 right now. I need to get my antenna up just a little bit higher over the peak of the roof to maybe extend out just a little bit more and move up. But a lot of places, there's a lot more traffic than there is here. I've also used the Raspberry Pi 3B with SDR radio, and we've done all kinds of experiments with different software, ran GQRX and a couple of other programs. They are almost too much. Those programs are almost too much for the Raspberry Pi. But I do have about a two-year-old model, so I imagine if I updated to the new one, I'd be able to run some of that. And want to get back to experimenting. I guess I need a new Raspberry Pi for Christmas. Amanda, go ahead.
All right. Thank you, Dale, and appreciate all that info. Let's see. While I'm talking about the nets, Victor has a couple pictures to show you guys. This is our ham tower. So be careful moving your antennas up higher. You don't want to snag Santa. But we put out lights and beacons for hours to make sure he will avoid them.
Nice.
All right. Yes, isn't that so? And the full moon's behind it. And sorry, it was so windy that it kept blurring on us. But it's so fun to put up those lights. And it almost causes a divorce. Jeff's up at the top and keeps sending down the rope. And I keep setting up one line at a time. And takes a lot of effort, but it's really a fun time. And we get a lot of drive-bys and a lot of honks as they drive by, kind of saying that they appreciate it. So, all right, let's see. We've got 40 meters on 7192-ish. I didn't see Kevin's final spot there. But we also have the 80-meter net tonight on 3905. Now, here's a big news breaker for you guys. The Echolink server has changed because one is down. So, and guess what? I just went to go to your message, Don, and it's gone. I think it's called the Guild. That's where you're going to want to join.
I can pull it up. Yeah, let me pull it up for you. It's
It's 679-320.
That's it. The Guild node, 679-320. And we had a question in the chat room I saw for other Santa nets. Of course, the 3916 net. Check that out, the 3916 net. And also, there's a net on 14300. Right around Christmas Eve, that where the kids can get on and talk to Santa. So just do a quick Google for Santa nets, Google search for Santa nets, and you'll find those in there. So there you go.
Absolutely, and I think a lot of local clubs will do the same thing in your area.
Yeah.
So listen out for those too, because I think they're a lot of fun and they love to get the kids on. Kids go see their grandparents and grandpa's like, come talk to Santa or Mrs. Claus. So that's a lot of fun. Oh, and to just continue the nets, we have DMR TAC 311 and D-Star on 14 Charlie. So thanks, everyone, for tuning in tonight. That's all I have. Don, I know you're wrapping this up.
I am. Okay. Well, Dale, any final words for us tonight from the great state of Kansas?
I don't believe so. Happy holidays to everyone. Hope everyone has a Merry Christmas. Hope we get some contributions of videos so that on the 19th we can give them an early Christmas present with a lot of good videos. So we'll be monitoring the email at hamnationvideos@twit.tv. That's it, Don.
All right. Thanks. George, any final words from you tonight?
Well, I hope to see Bob back next week. I think he's on the road right now, headed home as we speak. And if you're looking for something to do Friday night, join us live.amateurlogic.tv. We're doing the next episode of Ham College over there. So always a fun time, and we have a good chat room there and people trying to guess the answers. And, you know, it's good to review the material ever so often, because even though you've had your ticket for a number of years, that's all the more reason that you might miss a few of them today.
Absolutely. Very good. So, yep, we'll have hopefully we'll have Bob and Gordon back with us next week, and a whole lot of other fun too. As you can see, I'm getting ready for Saints Cowboys Thursday night and OU Texas on Saturday. So, who dat and no hook'em horns. There you go. Making friends all over the great state of Texas. Yes, sir. So, from over here in Mississippi, where we have the fence electrified, we'll see you next week here on Ham Nation. So good night, everybody. 7-3. We love you. Even you in Texas.
7-3. 7-3.